When David asked me what the title of the talk was, I said, well, we're going to work a different way of the same old, same old. Because from Buddha to Krishna to Muhammad to Elijah to Dr. Bill to Amma, they're all saying the same thing differently. They're all talking about, as Stuart Mooney and Dr. Yulin said, the goal of spiritual practices is to come to nothingness, to give up our sense of complete sense of who we are, the name in which we identify with and our personality, to step into a quantum field of everything. So, since there are many ways to do that, and we're trying to put into language the intangible, I thought I'd bring a different approach to the tangible as a way of possibly integrating this. So there are three sayings, possibly four if I have time, that I want to kind of move into in a very different way, in a very different understanding of embracing spiritual practice and spiritual walking our talk. The three of them are, you've heard them forever, and we're just going to go into a very different depth of them, I hope. To thine own self be true, the truth shall set you free, and all the world's a stage, and we're just players on it. That wasn't a direct quote. To thine own self be true. We've heard that forever. What does that actually mean? Well, what I want to do is take it in a different way, in a different level, in terms of walking and accessing and really embracing our truth. And to step out of the intellect's desire to sabotage that at every moment. So I thought I'd give you a personal example, because I think they're important to understand just from a practical level. I did the Anten Conference about 3 years ago, and I gave a talk. And the night before the talk, after I prepared it and put it together and so forth, my truth that kind of does, taps, as we all, taps us on the shoulder, and if we understand the resonance of that, we'll get our attention, said, don't do that talk. And I went, yeah, exactly. I went, you don't understand. These are serious reverends. I'm just kind of showing up to see what I can offer them as they've studied this forever. And the universe said, and it was a talk I'd done here at the church about a year or two before, so it went really well, and I went, cool. Works really well. They'll love it. They'll love me. It'll be great. That was my mistake. You hear the ego in there? You hear it? That's the insecurity. That's what it does. When we carry our wounds and don't heal our wounds, we can't exactly listen to our truth. What we need to do is always access into the shadow land of our wounds and heal them. So when the truth tapped me on the shoulder and said, don't do that talk, we'll help you out, we'll channel this, don't worry, which is what I usually do, I said, no, I can't do that. I'm too insecure to do that. And so I went the next day and gave the talk. Dr. Rick was actually in the talk, and we both talked about it afterward. It was probably one of the mediocre, milquetoast, vanilla, not really great talks I've ever done. And I had done it before. Because the universe let me know that wasn't so. And I didn't listen to my truth. See, your truth is non-tangible, not linear, not logical. It comes from a feeling place of what you know is so for you. And the mind goes, well, we're not going to have any of that. We're not going to have any of this thing that is non-linear, not logical, doesn't make sense, doesn't seem to be the direct course, doesn't attend to our senses in a way that validates and says, no, that's the way to go. And we sabotage it. And I almost did it again, but luckily, as I invite people to learn their lessons, I learn mine. I was talking to someone in church 2 weeks ago, and they said, so have you started preparing your talk and making notes? And I said, no, but I've been kicking it around. I had a pretty good idea, and it was a class I'm going to do at some point, was the second class of the Buddhist talk I gave where Siddhartha was walking his way to becoming enlightened and the ways and pitfalls that occurred. And I went, great talk. I know the three sabotages of Mara for Buddha. They just line up. They'll talk. It'll be great. And I just went, I'll just let it show up. And as I said this to one of the people in the church that I really hadn't made any notes, and I was pretty sure the various areas I was going to talk, don't do that talk. I went, oh, I got 2 weeks to go. What do you mean I'm not doing that talk? And the universe said, we'll help you out. Don't do that talk. And so I let it go because I knew, having learned my walk, if we learn our lessons, by the way, if we don't learn our lessons, the universe will hit you with a bigger stick. You know what that feels like. It hurts a lot. And if you don't learn again, the universe will hit you with a bigger stick. Because it demands that if you step on the path, that you step up to what you're committing to. Those of you who may have read Separate Reality by Carlos Castaneda in the 70s, he was walking after a huge experience of one of the shadowy lands and the demons that scared the heck out of him. He said, you know, this is really scary. And Don Juan said, well, you know, you can always just step off. And he said, no, I don't want to step off. It's worse over there than when I was on here. It just scares me. It does scare us because we have to let go of our sense of what is, our sense of identity, our sense of logic, our sense of control, our sense of knowing what we know. What I often say to my patients is when you start to not know, that's the beginning of wisdom. And so I am talking today on a talk that I'm not sure exactly where it's going. But I have a fairly good sense because I was meditating a week ago Wednesday, and all of a sudden I got inundated with data. And it said, you're going to talk about these things and from these perspectives. And it's been doing it ever since. So I'm a real tired because it keeps hitting me when I'm about to go to sleep with data. It's this lecture keeps flowing in, you know, it's like channel. So to thine own self be true is not just a nice cliche that we grew up with. It's not just a great Shakespearean quote. What it means is to thine own truth, inner truth, core truth, sense of who you are. Listen to that barometer, because that barometer never, ever, ever, ever lies. It is your path. And it can go from whether you what you're choosing on a menu at a restaurant to a very absolute course in your life of where you're headed. It can show up where you have a crossroads and there are fork in the road where one road is kind of bumpy and dirty and dark and not well lit, and you've got, you know, the Autobahn on the right, and it says, go left. And what does your mind do? It goes, oh, no. It's dark. It's bumpy. It's not well lit. Are you kidding? We won't get there. You could get lost. You could get hurt. And so we sabotage, again, the truth. We sabotage what shows up. So one of the great ways of knowing what your truth is sometimes, watch what it is your mind's debating. Because what's on the other side of that is your truth. Because your mind is attempting to talk you out of truth. What is so for you? Now, a lot of people say to me, okay, so how do you know when it's truth and not just your ego? It's a really good question. We don't have enough time to go into exactly what that looks like, but pretty much when it's about outside issues, second-guessing yourself, wanting to be, as I did with the Anton Conference, wanting to be liked and seen as credible with these ministers, insecurity, sense of needing to be cherished, included, to be worthy, to be seen, to be visible, to be cherished. When it's about those things, as I say to my patients, it's outside in, not inside, where truth lives, out. When we drop a pebble in the water, the rings don't go from outside to in. They go from inside to out. So does our truth. It starts at a level here. And you all know it. You've all had moments of it, whether it was about what to do for your day, where to turn left or right, finding a parking space, to talk to someone, not talk to someone, to take a risk. There's been this intangible sense of do it. And a lot of times we say, oh, no, that doesn't seem reasonable and logical. And we offset and let that go. Work at not doing that. To thine own self be true. Not just in terms of honesty and the tangible things we think about, in terms of truth. In terms of listening to your truth that is bigger and grander than you are. Like your soul, bigger and grander than you are. You won't think it. You won't just make it up. It'll sound ridiculous, but it's constantly correct. And you know that. And it's a trial and error aspect. You will not listen to it and things will go badly, or you won't get what you want. And you go, wow, I should have listened to myself. You know those times? Then do. Next time, remember in your body the resonance of truth. It resonates at the same level. It taps you at the same level, whether it's what you're choosing to eat or whether you're where you're choosing to move in your life. It's the same tapping because it's truth. It's yours. It's not anyone else's. I can see why Dr. Bill takes a sip of water. It's your truth. It doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. It's about what's so for you. And if it comes from your truth, it is not about selfishness. It's not about getting over on someone. It's not about manipulation. It's not about being better. If it's any of those, ego. And you know it pretty clearly if you start paying attention. So number one, to thine own self be true. Number two, the truth shall set you free. Boy, have we heard that a number of times? I mean, yeah, I've heard that one. What does that one really mean? If we take the truth as our core sense of knowing, our unmistakable barometer of what is for us, then what does it set us free to do? Not free in a free country, not about being able to cross the street, not about what vacation you take. It sets us free to be. In essence, it sets us free to walk an empowered life. When you know the truth of yourself and the essence and core of where your truth resonates from, you walk empowered. You walk empowered because you know your strengths, you know your limitations, you know what you want to work on, what you don't want to work on, and who you are. So as the Zen Koan says, they shoot arrows and find no target. In this society, we do anything not to be vulnerable and visible. And yet that's where part of empowerment lives. Let me give you another example. I just told you I was insecure at the end in conference. They went, Dr. Gary's like insecure? It's like, I have my moments. I shared with you a vulnerability. I've shared another one in the circle group that we do about when I was a kid and was overweight and got picked on. Does anyone feel like I am turning my power over to you? Does anyone feel like I am weak, passive, available for you to take shots at me, or making myself vulnerable in the Western way that we think of vulnerability? I see the heads going. Yeah, you can hear it in my tone. I stand in my truth. So if someone came up to me and said, you know, took a shot at me around one of those things, I would look at them and go, wow, why did you need to do that? They can't hurt me because I don't give them the power. My truth sets me free of knowing who I am. My truth also allows me to take risks, because what are risks? Fearful adventures into the unknown that scare the heck out of us. And yet, as I tell my patients, when you move to the unknown, there must be adventure and a certain amount of fear, because it's unknown. Our ego doesn't know what to do with that. But if we walk it from a place of this is the next step, then so be it. I'm throwing out a lot of examples because I want to make this tangible. This isn't theory. This isn't some kind of, you know, Buddhist thing that, oh, well, other people can do that, but, you know, we can't. Of course we can. We're all here to do that. And if you're in this church, you're even more amenable to doing that. And so the deal is vulnerability is not weakness. Sensing it as weakness is weakness. What does Bill say all the time? As you believe it, so is it done unto you. Uh-huh. Yeah, if you believe you're a target, I don't like the word victim particularly, but if you believe you don't have strength, you don't have power, you're not empowered, guess what? That's exactly how you walk. Where does that come from? From what I say in my book, The Learned Personality, what we learned about who we are not. We have to work on that. So the truth shall set you free, because it allows you to walk in freedom that is beyond what we understand about living in this country. It is walking in a way with no sense of being open to attack, open to being hurt, open to being put down. We are, as Yulin said, open to that. So what we own, as you believe it, so is it done unto you. And guess what? When you walk empowered, because as you saw, I went to the end conference and I was like, I went, oh, cool, another lesson to learn. I often say that to couples, that if they were in a higher Buddhist state, when they triggered each other into craziness and at one point came off the ceiling and regrouped a little bit, they'd go to their partner and say, thanks, I didn't know I still had that to work on. Now, it's tough because it triggers all emotions, as couples do. So what I realized, when you feel you've turned power over, when you feel or experience someone else coming after you and it hurts, when you feel that you've been, those arrows aren't just passing by you and one hits you, you go, oh, I'm still open to being hurt in this way. What is it about me that is going on that I am not as solid as I thought maybe in this area? Or, wow, didn't even realize I wasn't solid in that area. Worked on a lot of stuff, and holy cow, there's another one. Which is true. We always have our work to do. But when you walk in a free state of mind and being, it doesn't matter where you walk. I remember when I was in my 20s, I went to New York, and the universe guided me to this guy in Soho who had a crystal shop. And this was, you know, in the 70s, which was, yes, it was the 70s, but in the part of Soho I was in, a crystal shop, it was like, wow, that was really interesting. I didn't even quite know what they were. I was just getting familiar with them in those days. And I walked in and I met this guy, and he and I talked, and he lived in that place. I'd never seen that before. And I'd left the shop, and we'd actually hugged. It was a great encounter. And I was walking around Soho, and I saw him walking. That's the middle of New York before Giuliani made it safe. And he was walking along like he was walking in Point Lobos. He was gliding. It wasn't even like he was walking. I said, I want to learn how to do that. How does he do that? And it took a long time, because what we're talking about is that. He walks in that space. He walks in that breath. He walks in that knowing. And it's not here. It's here. Inside out. And when we walk in that space, people can attempt to hurt us, but they don't hurt us. Dr. Rick gave me a great quote from Maharishi that I love. And it says, I love you, and it's none of your business. I know. I said, Rick, that's great. I love that one. And the reason I love it is the reason you get it, is inside out. My love of you has nothing to do with what you do with that. It's not about outside in, that if I love you, maybe you'll love me, or you know, you see how sensitive or compassionate or caring I am, or whatever. It's owning it here. So when you say you love someone and it doesn't matter what you think about that, it's what I call owning your stuff without an attachment to the outcome. To speak your truth without an attachment to the outcome. For instance, I mean, a lot of people have said to me, you know, Gary, I did what you said. I spoke my truth and it didn't work. I said, really? So what were you hoping would work? And they said, well, they were supposed to change. I said, really? If that's your goal, you're going to be disappointed a lot. Because disappointment comes from expectation. An expectation that someone else is going to change, we have no power over that. We have no power over someone else. What we have is centering and our own truth that allows us to walk our freedom among the masses. Those who listen to our truth or have a sensitivity to our truth or appreciate our truth, I'll hang with you. Those who don't, next. I let my patients know all the time, because people have this thing of like, well, you know, I have to have all these friends. I have to have all these connections. I'm like, really? I said, with work and your own practices and your children or your grandchildren and things you're doing, how much time do you really have to spend creating an in-depth, in-truth, connected, caring, watch your back, always there for your relationship? I said, if you have 2 to 4, maybe 3 to 5, you're rich. And they go, hadn't thought of it that way. I said, well, let's make it even less hopeless. How about in the fact of 307 million people in just this country alone, you need 3. And you go, wow, that doesn't sound so outrageous. Well, it is, because there's still a smaller percentage of people who are like this, want to hear depth, want to talk about depth, want to relate in depth, want to relate in truth, will listen to truth. But it's doable. That's the world that I like hanging out in. I have really not a whole lot of use for the rest. If I have a patient who walks in and says, well, you know, friends aren't my issue, Dr. Richmond, I've got 100 friends. And I go, in my back of my mind, I go, oh my God, she just added a year to her therapy. We have a lot of work to do. So the truth sets us free inside, never outside. The truth allows us to walk in our center. That brings us to the next one, all the world's a stage. So what does that mean? Well, Dr. Bill talks about that, the analogy of being is two birds. One of them's in the tree and one of them's down on the ground. The one on the ground is on stage, pecking away, going after worms, competing with the rest of the people, you know, trying to be part of the group, wanting to fly well with everybody, blah, 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 blah. The one in the tree is the witness, who sits above and offside, watching and learning and appreciating what's going on. When we're in our truth, when we're free walking in our truth, and it's not about outside in where we have to be accepted, appreciated, cherished, included, so forth, by whomever, we get to witness and sit in the audience. We get to sit out here watching the play up here. And then it becomes, I like Dr. Yulin's Ho'oponopono. I keep referring to him because I thought he was interesting in terms of how he looks at the data, as he calls it, that he takes in. But it all becomes data. It's all interactions to enhance your data. Not the person you meet, not the person you exchange with, not the person you bump in a hallway, not the person you're having an intense talk with. It's about your data. I was at a party once, and I was with some friends who were of another political persuasion than I. It turned out almost all the party was the other political persuasion. And I didn't realize he had a dark side to him that showed up. And in the middle of the party, I was off talking to someone, and he needed to see if he could pull me off center. It was really interesting. He pipes up like an E.F. Hutton commercial in the middle of the party to everyone who's there. It's like 30 people. And he said, Gary is of this political persuasion. What do you all think about that? And the room went dead. I mean, literally, totally silent. But people are talking, you know, like a party, and then it stopped. And I was like, wow. And what's cool about when you walk in your own freedom, you don't have to think of a response. It just kind of leaks out. So I, without thinking, and it's not about touting what I did, but sharing with you that you can all do this. When you're not caught up in your head and your beehive, you can then, your being thinks on its feet. And I said, if there's anyone undecided here about where they are politically, I'd like to talk to you. And it wasn't me, it channeled. I don't take responsibility for that one. And it was like that commercial where E.F. Hutton, they all go silent, they start talking. Everyone started talking, and I was ignored. And I went up to my friend who had just been downgraded to an acquaintance. And I looked at him, and I just looked at him, and I went, really? I've decided that's one of my favorite best words, by the way. It goes everywhere. And I'll give you another example. And again, I'm giving you examples because I want you to see they're so simple. When I say them, you go like, oh, it's not a big deal. Because when you're out of your way, people who can't think on their feet, it's because they have a beehive going on in their head. All the insecurities. Am I going to say it right? Am I going to say what they need to hear? Am I going to be okay with what I'm saying and what they're hearing? Are they going to validate what I'm saying? Will I still be included if I say it? When you've got all that, then you're looking for the right answer instead of your answer. You're not in truth when you're looking for the right answer. Your answer will always be right for you. But the right answer means you want them to validate that. People who second-guess themselves don't have an inner validating system. They were brought up there as little children. They went and went, oh, it's pretty cloudy outside. And the parent went, no, not really. It really isn't as cloudy as you think. It's just a momentary blah, 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 blah. And they go, oh, I was wrong. That learned personality develops a sense of, I'm not really right. I don't really see things particularly well. And I ought to check with like four or five sources before I say anything. That's seeking the right answer. It's completely not right. So the other example was, I wear boots almost always. I was going to say a lot, but that'd be silly. And it came from 30 years ago of working with teenagers and having a horse, and it just became part of my deal. And I had a patient come in, and he was a kind of a heavy hitter, CEO, power guy. And he's looking around the room, and over on a wall over here, I have my diplomas up, is what do they call the ego wall. It just let, you know, a halo effect of, yeah, I have this, don't ask me about it. And he's looking around, he's going, and I could see, he's like looking for something to do, and he looks down at my boots and goes, so, what's the deal with the boots? Now, I haven't even asked this guy what's up and why you're here. And again, it's channeled. It's not my answer. What you find is when you live in your truth and walk free, you don't own the stuff. You just appreciate and are grateful for the channel. And without thinking about it, I just said, because I like them. He didn't know where to go with that. What are you going to say? No, you don't? When you walk in your truth and you're free to express it, the answers are so simple. You know, we get into debates. I mean, if we really have a political issue we want to debate, okay, you have fun with somebody, say, let's debate this. You know, we'll have a glass of wine, we'll debate it, we'll go crazy. But too many people want to debate because they need to win. Well, what are you winning? You're not winning a sense of self because you've already lost that by the debate. If the debate is about being smarter, better, seen as more articulate, you've already lost. I don't get into many debates. I'll have good discussions. I like sharing about feelings and working stuff through. But I don't do a whole lot of debating because it's like, and I tell couples, if one of you has to win and the other one has to lose, your marriage is already losing. Because you're adversarial at that point, unless you choose to debate. I mean, if one of you, like James Clavell and his wife, you know, severe Democrat, severe Republican, I'd love to sit on the sideline and watch them talk. That'd be a hoot and a half. But if you want to debate, it's cool, because you're owning that you want to. But when you go to parties, how often are you, because, you know, we want to keep it light and easy, so we don't say a whole lot, but when you're in a debate, what's the point? What are you trying to get over on the other person? Now, if the other person says, you know, if someone had come up to me at a party and said, you know, I'm not your political persuasion, but I really like to know why you think so and why you believe in that. Okay, I'll share. I'm not debating. I'm not looking for his approval. I'm just sharing. When you debate, ask yourself, why are you doing this? And if you get caught up in a debate, ask yourself why you turned your power over to them to get caught up. Because if that's not what you came to the party for, what's up? And that's where we learn our lesson. How did I get roped into this? How many times have you said that? Like, oh my God, I did that again. Oh my God, I went with that same kind of person again. Oh my God, you know, I got people angry at me at work again. How come they're all angry at me? Well, as you believe it, so is it done unto you. You may want to look at why you feel you can't be honored and have people respect you. And why do you keep finding people who don't? You think that's coincidence? No. I don't even believe in coincidence. So, all the world's a stage. I want to sit in the audience. Deepak Chopra calls it detached caring. I can care for someone, but I don't have to be caught up and enmeshed in them. I love you and it's none of your business. I want to know what's going on for you, but it's not in essence about me and who I am. I want to be there for you. But it's not about the reinforcement or what I get back from it exactly.